Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 373 of the podcast with my guest author, Veronica Roth. Very honored to have had an opportunity to chat with Veronica. She is awesome. I was excited to learn that she and I are both very similar in our hermity ways. Speaking of hermity, I hope everybody's doing well in the current situation. Here we plod onward as various things reopen and we all continue to evaluate what is happening. I am thinking of you all and I send you my best. I had a wonderful time last week with Travis McElroy on the My Brother and Me YouTube page. We did a live stream. It's still available to watch if you would like to. It was a ton of fun. We talked about a bunch of stuff and I sang a very silly song that I wrote. So check that out if you want to. I will talk to you guys soon. I think maybe it helps to do like a I go three, you go two, I go one. Somehow that helps sync in a way I don't totally understand. Three, one, blast off. The rocket ship that is this podcast is out in the world. Okay, so we were both in the middle of doing some light quarantine complaining, just some light, upbeat, playful quarantine complaining. But we were both saying, like, yeah, there's just a sort of a flux back and forth of, like, you know what, this is okay, we're gonna get through this. And then, yet why did I snap at my dog for doing nothing wrong? Like, somewhere deep inside, there will be like a little, you know, there's clearly some kind of like little monster still living in there who's very sad and upset about everything. So,
well, if you think about yourself as having a finite capacity for just tolerance of annoying or difficult things, then you're using most of that capacity all the time now. So anything else is just going to kill you.
That's right. That's right. Now, where are you? Where are you shuttered up?
I am in Chicago.
Okay. Chicago is a city that has done better than people were afraid, yeah?
I guess I don't know. you're probably right, yes.
Well, in terms of, like, you know, it not being New York or not being, you
sure.
know. Not.
Well, our mayor has been, like, driving around yelling at people for gathering in person. Like, literally in her car, shouting out the window. So maybe she's done her
That's
part.
Right. That's right. It's a real get off my lawn, but for the whole city.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We do what we can. How about now? Are you, because you, do you usually write at home? Do you have a studio at home? Then that's kind of where you create.
Yes. I'm a homebody normally. And my husband and I coexist very peacefully together all the time under normal circumstances. So for us, the changes have been, you know, outside. Like, our neighborhood has a lot more people walking around than it used to, which is interesting.
Everything you're saying, I might as well have said myself. Yeah. I could not relate more. Which is almost like, that's kind of weird. Like, that element of, it's sort of surreal in a different way when a lot of your life remains unchanged, but there's a strange unease around everything and lots of other people's lives have dramatically changed around you. And it's exactly the same for me. Like, step outside and I'm like, yep, nope, this is this is not normal.
And it feels oddly, and this is in the pettiest way possible. So obviously, like, it's a much bigger situation than this, but I feel like other people have intruded on my life during quarantine, which is the opposite of how a lot of people feel. You know, like, they feel contained and claustrophobic and isolated, and I'm like, get out! Get out of my... Like, I'm just trying to walk my dog and go to the grocery store, and
yeah,
it's ridiculous of me. I admit this.
I know. Wait, listen, we all have our levels of, oh my God, I can't believe this is a thing I'm complaining about right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that everybody's just sort of butting up against all the time. But are you, so you are someone too who's kind of, are you used to spending time outdoors and not necessarily everyone also spending time outdoors? Or is it just that you're, the times when you would normally go outside your house, like everyone else happens to also be home and therefore is like, oh yeah, by the way,
yeah,
I'm here all the time now too. Here I am.
It's more the latter. Yeah, I'm not a huge, I mean, it's just cold here, so you don't go out as
fair.
Much, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and you know, what's polite right now is to kind of steer clear of people when possible. And so when you go for a walk, it's a little like a game of Pac-Man. You know, it's just like, how do I get... Like, how do I navigate this situation?
Yeah. Which is really, which is like this sort of, for me, blown up version of how I already am in person, which is very clumsy and awkward and very like, I'm absolutely the person, and maybe we all feel like we're this, but I really do feel like I am this, is the person who somebody, you're walking in a direction and someone is walking in a direction, and then you both decide to walk in the other same direction to get out of each other's way.
Yes.
And then the weird dance happens where you're like, are we playing basketball? What's happening? Like, just a back and forth of like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then I like, you know, I can't say words right. Like, oh, Joshua, why don't you go to, this is crazy. It's just that, like, that's my normal life. Plus, you know, the everyone else also being in that space. So
yeah.
There's just so much like, oh, I don't get, okay, I guess we both decided to go to, okay, all right. I'm going to stand still and you can walk around. Like,
this must so, be hell
so time
for you.
Consuming. That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Okay. Where are you from originally? Are you from the Chicago area or no?
Yeah. So I've lived in this area since I was about 5. I was born in New York and we had kind of a whirlwind move around the globe with my parents. And then they got divorced and we stayed here. So.
Okay.
Yes.
What was the globetrotting all about?
Well, both my parents are European. So my father was born in Germany and my mother was born in Belgium, but she's Polish. And I think for them, it was like normal to live in other places, you know? So when I was a kid, we lived in Hong Kong. My dad's work brought him there, but I think, you know, he kind of volunteered for the adventure of it. And then we moved to Germany, where he's from, for a little while. And then this was all before I was 5. So I don't remember basically any of it, which is a real shame.
I know.
Like, you guys couldn't have.
Do you have weird hazy? Yeah. Do you have weird hazy memories that may or may not just have been kind of built whole cloth out of seeing photographs of yourself and stuff?
Yes. Yeah. That's totally an experience I've had where I'm like, do I remember that or do I remember being told a story about that? But yeah, I have a very clear memory of a guy that we used to walk past in the park in Hong Kong, catching a pigeon with his bare hands. And so I just have this...
A different, always the same pigeon or it only happened once?
No,
or...
it only happened once. It was like a special okay. day in the park. And for some reason, that is the only memory I have.
As a child, though, you can see how you would be like, I swear to God, that is magic. Like,
yes.
That is pure magic.
Exactly.
And was we you plus any other siblings or is it just you and your folks?
Yeah. So I have a brother and a sister and I also have an assortment of step siblings and half siblings. But
yeah,
when I say we,
but the people
it's,
who were. Yeah.
Yeah. Brother and sister.
Yeah, that's who was getting. Were there all three of you when you were up to 5 years old and getting shuffled around? Are you the youngest?
Or yeah, I'm the youngest.
That's a lot of kids to shuffle around from country to country.
Yes, my mother insists we were all well behaved, but I'm not sure how that's possible. So I think she might have like very rosy memories of that time.
Right. Right. No, you guys were all great. I was heavily sedated for most of those years, but
exactly.
Does that mean that your siblings would have to go like to different schools in those different countries or and did you kind of escape that because you were young enough not to necessarily be going to say a kindergarten?
Well, I did go to school because they kind of start you earlier in other places. So I went to Montessori school in Hong Kong. And then in Germany I was in kindergarten already. So I went to kindergarten twice because the first time I went was in German. So I didn't like learn anything that you need. And I was also just not old enough. But anyway, yeah. So my siblings went to a different there's an international school in Hong Kong that they went to, and then yeah, I think my sister went to elementary school in German. Like, it was all in German in Germany somehow. I don't know how she did that.
Well, at least you can say that you went to kindergarten in the actual country from which we originate the word kindergarten. That feels like it's got to have some kind of cachet. That's right. You're very own kinder. And do you still did you inherit by virtue of all these experiences and your parents the globe-trotting desire? I know you said you were a homebody, but does that extend to, like, I also don't necessarily love traveling, or do you love being at home until you're traveling and then you love traveling?
No, I really like it. Yeah, I get to go a lot of places for work, which is great, because then you end up, I don't know, seeing a lot more that way when there's kind of a dual purpose to it. But I also just travel a lot with my husband. But when I'm at home, I like to, I'm really committed to it, I guess. Like, I don't leave the house very often.
Do you have a place that you, is that, I mean, are you a nester in that way? Have you sort of created a world around you at home that feels like, why would I leave this?
Yes. So my office specifically is in a sunroom. So it's like this beautiful, glowy fish tank with plants in it and books. Yeah, it's great.
How long have you been doing this whole time?
Wow, since I graduated college. So I was 22 when I got the book deal that was Divergent. And then I started writing full time at that point. So once I graduated from college, that was it.
That's pretty amazing. That's the most boring thing I could have possibly said, but it is true.
It was amazing. It was awesome. Because I had been really worried about getting a job, because it just, like, wasn't, you know, I wanted to work in publishing with books. Yeah. And I was worried because nothing was coming up, and I wanted to live in the Chicago area, but we don't have a whole lot of publishers here. So anyway, so I didn't have to worry about that at that point, which was really nice.
Yeah. Did you have this? I can't believe I'm launching straight into this, because this is, like, very dicey, but did you have friends that were kind of like, because that can be hard, right? That sort of early success, if you have friends who are interested in the same kind of vocation, or even if they're not interested in the same vocation, like, that sort of, that's a delicate age still to kind of be like, yeah, this thing has happened and it's unusual and it might not happen like this for people that I'm close to who want that.
Yeah, I mean, it got, for the most part, I was friends with mostly people who had no aspirations toward anything even writing adjacent. So that part helped. And they were also, I mean, a group of very, very kind and supportive people. So for the most part, it was great. But in a couple relationships, I think it mostly got dicey, as you say, when because I had really profound anxiety. And when I appeared ungrateful or apprehensive about what was happening in a couple friendships, that became an issue. So it wasn't exactly the amazing thing that was happening. It was the fact that, like, I was having trouble with it, which I think
your perceived attitude or ungratefulness. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think was reasonable to be worried, because I had, you know, a mental illness and still have it. Like, sorry, but
hey guys, guess what? Yeah. Yeah. But that's hard too, because that is a sort of, I mean, that experience of having success, not feeling like it, oh, this has solved something internal that is very much a huge part of how I walk through life, and how to communicate to that to other people. That's really tough. I mean, I think that's definitely something that I've sort of had to dance with as well, is this idea of, like, how much of the success that I seem to not be appreciating, if it's some sort of critical point in my life or other, how much am I not appreciating? How much can I pile on self-loathing to being quote unquote ungrateful about this thing that is great that doesn't necessarily lift me out of a place that is either chemical or just deeper rooted than, like, hey, you got some good news.
I know.
Isn't that enough? You know,
shouldn't you be perfectly happy now? Isn't that how brains
are
wired?
Yeah.
No.
Can't you check that off? Yeah, exactly. How did your anxiety first start manifesting? Was it something that you became friends with at an early age,
or
did it sort of pop up unexpectedly?
So at one point in the recent past, I went and looked at all my report cards from like elementary school, which are really not report cards. They're just like, here's a report on how your child is, you know?
Yeah.
But in each one of them, they were like, Veronica seems to carry heavy burdens.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It made me sad looking back. I was like, oh, what a like kind of grim child I was.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know what it was or what to call it until I was an adult.
Mm-hmm. So even like in high school, were you having what you would characterize as like anxiety manifested in a way that could kind of be pointed to, like that was an anxiety attack? Or was it like, no, there was just a sort of low level hum at all, you know, most of the time that was like, I was uptight or I was tense or I was scared or.
Yeah. Well, I kind of thought that I was like an asshole, I think mostly because my anxiety in my adolescence manifested as like irritability a lot, which it still does. And I'm just a lot better at identifying it and letting people know that I'm not like, I'm sorry, I'm being irritable. I am just nervous. But as a teenager, no, I thought I was just like, my emotions were just wildly out of control. But I think it's challenging when you have, this sounds silly, but it's challenging when you don't have any depression symptoms at all, because you're kind of taught to recognize depression symptoms. At least I was. And so I thought, because I don't have any of those, I must be fine. This is just my personality. But as
right,
it turns
right.
out,
that makes sense.
Not so much, you know?
Yeah. So people would be like, look, if you're having trouble getting out of bed every morning.
Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Don't blame yourself because blah, blah, blah. You're like, no, that's not my problem. So when you say irritability, was it just kind of, and was it like an impatience with the way other people made choices and how they made you feel? Was it, like, what did that look like?
Yeah, it was just kind of silly stuff, you know, just like having a very little patience with the people around me and especially with my, you know, with my family and just kind of generally like avoiding things. Like, it's funny how we naturally know how to kind of protect ourselves. So I would just withdraw from everything. And so I just thought I was like someone who didn't like other people and who had no patience and needed to work on like being a kinder person. And then once I started addressing the anxiety, like I became a lot kinder and more patient and more engaged with other people. And it was like, oh, well, this kind of makes sense of my whole teen experience.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hey, Max Funsters, it's Jesse Thorne. This week on my public radio interview show, Bullseye, I'm talking with Tina Fey and Robert Carlock about creating Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, and also just kind of why they're the best at everything.
There was a window of time when we used to go to awards things and pick up our prizes and party with the people from Mad Men.
You can find Bullseye at MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne.
When you say that you kind of were moody, or that you would, you know, things would feel like they were kind of, your emotions would sort of be out of control, was it something like, and by the way, I guess it goes without saying, but, you know, when we're teenagers, also that shit's happening anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So when you pile, you know, pile just regular old hormones on top, was it a situation where, like, you would be having fun and having a good time and everything would sort of seem fine, and then all of a sudden it would just take this very abrupt turn for you emotionally? Or was it kind of more consistent, like, would someone else have been like, no, listen, Veronica's, you know, she's great. It's just like, I feel like I can never please her, or, you know, she wants it her way or it's not okay. Or is it like, no, sometimes she's great and sometimes she's really unhappy and I don't know how to avoid one and not the other. Do you know what I mean?
Or yeah, no, I totally know what you mean. And I'm just struggling to remember exactly what I was like. I think it was probably...
You didn't get my questionnaire filled out in advance where you answered all these questions?
Shockingly, no. No, I think it was more that sometimes I'd be fine and sometimes I wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you... were you dating in high school?
Oh, boy. Well... Sorry, you just asked the million-dollar question. Yeah, I dated one guy for 8 years, starting at 14 and ending at 22.
The old high school marriage scenario.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's hard. It's hard to look back at. Oh, my God.
8 years.
8 years.
That is a lifetime. I mean, that is like when adult people in their 30s have been together for 8 years, people are like, God, you guys have really made it such a long time. How wonderful.
I know.
And so to imagine being with someone 8 years at that age, that's like 20 years. That's basically like 20 human years when you're that young.
I agree. And I turned to my husband at some point last year and I was like, hey, as of this day, we have now been together longer than I was with my ex. And he was like,
finally.
Great. It's like, yes, it is great.
I've been waiting for this milestone so that I can officially retire that as my longest relationship. How does that happen? How did that happen for you? Was it somebody that you'd known a really long time before then? And so a friendship just kind of naturally turned into this endless relationship that now couldn't end because you were so close?
No. So we met my freshman year of high school when I was 14, because I'm a little younger than the usual like person in my
Me
class.
Me too.
Oh, nice. Or do you also have an August birthday?
Well, I have a February birthday, but I got sent to kindergarten early, as you did. But then, because my first kindergarten was in English, I skimmed through it quickly. No, I went to a preschool that, for some reason, I guess, just like gave me a kind. I still don't understand. Mm. All I know is on the same day, I got a diploma for preschool and a diploma for kindergarten at like this. Just this preschool, and then the school district wouldn't accept that as real, so
wow.
Then I started in at kindergarten at 5, and they were like, oh no, we've made a mistake, she does know kindergarten. I don't know what that means, but she knows kindergarten, so let's plop her into first grade. So I was only a year younger.
You basically got the like childhood equivalent of like your bachelor's and your master's at the same time. That's is what you're telling
that's
me.
That's right. Emphasis on the childhood equivalent. That basically means I stopped wetting my pants the same year I learned to tie my shoes.
Yep.
I think is basically what we're talking about. But
listen,
yes. But yes, I did get 2 degrees. Yes, I did get 2 degrees. Yeah. Okay. So you met him. You were a little on the young side. You met him at freshman in high school. Did you go to a public school?
I did. Yeah. And he was... in a band.
He's older than you?
No.
Did you say?
No, same age.
Okay. All right.
And
okay.
He was the lead singer of a metal band. But they were...
At age 14.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
I still feel that he was incredible in that band. Because he could do this screaming thing in a very consistent and like very nice sounding way. He was just very good at it. But... And it was a Christian metal band. So I think part of the reason we stayed together so long is because there was this kind of like religious like commitment to like the relationship and to being committed and to like dating in order to like explore the possibility of marriage. Like that kind of sort of like conservative religious approach to dating was not the most conservative, but definitely like pretty conservative still, was kind of like what characterized our relationship. And that was because he was like that.
Yeah. That, of course, you know, that was what I was getting at. It's like, I guess I'm surprised. Like, that doesn't necessarily gel with my sense of your parents and them being from, you know, different European countries and living elsewhere. And
no, so my family's not religious. I am religious now, but in just a much different way than that. I mean, whoa.
Not as much in the Christian metal band.
Yeah.
My religion is entirely based in Christian metal.
It is 22 minutes in and we are talking about religion.
Yeah, girl.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
But it's hard to avoid because, you know, how else does a high school relationship last 8 years? Like, unless you guys have like this something special going on. Sure. Not necessarily a positive special thing, which, you know.
Yeah. Well, what? Okay, so you fell for him and he sort of set the, I mean, not to say, again, like you were both in the relationship, but yeah, it does seem like when somebody comes in with like a strong credo,
yeah,
that's, and it gets established early on, that is a really powerful kind of influencer throughout.
You know, it's kind of hard to look back at in some ways, because I feel that I am like an assertive person now, but at that time I was not. He had a sort of domineering personality.
You were 14.
I know.
14.
I know.
You're allowed to not. You're not, I mean, of course you're entitled to cringe, but also like I find myself holding myself accountable for younger things as if I were the exact person I am now, because there's continuity. There's a, you know, there's a through line of like, I'm me. I was in this body.
Yeah.
And only recently, looking back at some of my old journals, did I have to accept like, oh, even though I have thought that I kind of like was able to make that separation and look at that young person as someone different, as I'm reading words I was writing when I was 13, I'm realizing how freaking young I was. Like, oh, okay. There's a new level of acceptance and forgiveness and love that I have to give to myself, because that 13-year-old is definitely 13. Mm-hmm. She's not this like 13 going on 30 that I've been pretending I was to myself without this like hard copy evidence. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And like, at what age did you feel like an adult? Because for me, I felt like an adult at around 14.
Which, oh, for sure.
A lie.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I think that's like, for me, you know, jumping into kind of the goth world and like listening to music that my parents wouldn't approve of and all that kind of stuff was, I think some part of me felt like something clicked over because it was such a specific transformation. And for many of us, when we do that, it does kind of, I think it's this kind of place marker where somehow in our child brain, we're like, well, I've crossed over into adulthood now because mm-hmm. I've made this drastic choice that clearly exhibits, you know, this rite of passage. I guess I'm an adult now. And like, you know, this suddenly half the journal entries are like wizened, like kind of impressively written, like, well, some of that, you know, those are lyrics I probably would write today if I were trying to write music still or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like the next day I'm talking about something that is so silly and sad and just like, oh no, this was also important to you. You were 13.
I know. You know,
you were for real 13.
You know, what's been kind of healing is interacting with teenagers so frequently, because like Divergent readers are, you know, anywhere from like 11 to 80, like whatever, because it reached so far. But
yeah.
A lot of the people I interact with are around 13, and they will be kind of like intense and a little bit silly in the face-to-face interaction, and then they'll like hand me a note that they wrote like when they were calmer and it wasn't so stressful, and they have smart
yes.
and wise and like really
yes.
complex things to say, and I'm like, this is what teenagers are. They are half like totally
yes.
bonkers and half totally
could,
great.
Could not agree more, because I have that experience with Legend of Korra, like going to a con
oh, yeah.
and meeting a girl who's cosplaying as that character. Again, I think it's probably, and it's a similar type of girl in a lot of cases, right? It is this sort of emotionally tough, yet incredibly vulnerable, soft underbelly, like, you know, those kinds of young women who are you know, it's like we didn't know what to do with our big thoughts. Like,
yeah.
like our brains didn't have room for the stuff that was rattling around in there. And so... yeah, there will be somebody who's like quivering and with tears in their eyes, and they can't articulate how they're feeling. And then that same person 100% will send me an email or hand me a letter exactly like you said. And it's and you read it and you're like, I would be friends with this person today. Like,
yeah,
I would call you for advice. This is a wonderful letter.
Yeah. And they're a self-selecting group, right? Like, I can imagine that the kind of young person who discovers Korra and the kind of young person who reads books all the time, like that's
yeah.
those are very special like types of young person.
Yeah, for those things to become important enough to them that they want to express the meaningfulness to some person who, you know, had something to do with it. In your case, obviously, that I would feel probably way more comfortable taking credit than I do for me when I'm like, I did a voice. I wish I could say that that any of this beauty came from my brain, but I'll act as an emissary, an ambassador of some kind. But, you know, you have people going, this thing that you came up with, you know, has given me the strength to get through this year of my life or whatever. And that's a lot. That's a lot to process, yeah, or just to carry, I think.
You know, I think I'm not even kind of tempted to take credit for it, because I'm always like, I'm so glad that this book entered your life at a particular time and spoke to you in a particular way, but like, it's you doing all that stuff. Like, I really have nothing to do with it. So you're like happy to have witnessed to have been able to help facilitate it, but it's just like a lot of people read this book and thought it was garbage. So, you know, clearly, like, there's it's not like an objective quality that the book possesses that makes you have these revelations.
You don't open it up and a beam of light doesn't shoot out of it, and like angels don't have a chorus.
You know, shockingly, it is not like one of those musical cards when you open it, please.
Thank you for understanding. I was describing a musical card. I'm very glad that came across. Oh my God. Okay, so you had your husband/boyfriend for many, many years.
Yes.
But you know, that's interesting, because I think there's a different level of, or maybe this isn't true, but I'll use this as a way in to ask the question. You know, so much of my emotional life was spent navigating crushes, or, you know, very short relationships that to me at the time seemed very long. And by that, I mean like maybe 6 months. And so there was so much like tempestuous stuff, which granted, like, yes, you know, when you're young, especially, that can be the thing that kind of prompts you to sit down and write, or, you know, want to find some creative way to express yourself. But at the same time, like it is definitely, sometimes my life seems so one note when I'm reading that stuff. And so I wonder if any of that was kind of peeled back and kind of tucked away because, like, you had that part like taken care of in some way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, you're not looking around in the same way. Like, before,
it's not the feverishness of, you know, being a single teenager, I guess, maybe.
Yes, exactly. And I feel sad about that as an adult, because I'm like, well, that was the time, you know? But also, like, I did have a unique experience, and I think I, as a result, kind of focused a lot more on my work, my creative work, and then also on school, and yeah. But it was kind of one of those, like, consuming, like, vaguely controlling, probably not enough to be considered like an actual like bad relationship, but like bad enough, you know, that it, I don't know, I look back at it like, oof, that wasn't good for either of us. Like, I don't know what that dynamic was, but it was so like, it was weird.
But you didn't feel like he was the creative one in the relationship, like you were still creating,
yeah.
You kind of mentioned that. Yeah. Were you writing? Was that your primary source of like output?
Yes, I have never done anything else hobby-wise. I guess I like flirted with sports for a little while because I am 6 feet tall, so that you kind of like have to. It's like a requirement.
I know, I've never been, I'm only 5'10", but I've still never been forgiven for not being on basketball teams. Like, that was cardinal sin.
So you know then, because 5'10 is tall. Let's call 5'10
is definitely tall. 5'10 is tall. Yeah. And weirdly, I actually had like two of my best friends in high school were taller than me. That is 100% not the reason that we were drawn to each other, but it is kind of a funny coincidence that I would be like with my friend Sophie, who was 6 feet, and I would feel short. And it was such a strange feeling. I couldn't tell if I liked or hated it, but like I felt like I had to have an opinion about it because it was so strange.
Yeah. No, all my friends were tiny. So I was like, they were like 5'4" and below in some cases. And then there was me. It's like this giant.
Towering.
Yes.
I'll reach that cup for you, friend.
Exactly. That was my job.
Yeah. So you flirted with it, but it was more of a sense of like, yeah, other people's expectations of like, well, come on, don't waste this accidental thing that's been sprung on you. Yeah.
Yes. And we had like a little tiny momentary volleyball dynasty in my family because my sister is 6'2". And so she played volleyball and she was great at it. And so I kind of like tried to play along for a year and then I gave up. But that was like the extent of my non-writing hobbies. There was like choir and there was a brief stint as a volleyball player and then there was writing. But writing was what I did every day.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. I mean, that is such, again, the sort of discipline of this is just something I have to do. I feel called to it on some level, which is like a very, I guess, sort of fancy way of talking about it. But were there books that influenced you when you were younger that kind of prompted you forward? Or was it like coming from some sort of internal fire that wasn't even necessarily, you know, because like I look back on stuff that I was doing and I can see like, oh, I wrote this song because I was obsessed with Rufus Wainwright's first album. And like, I wanted, like, whether I realized it or not, I can see that, I can draw those connections versus friends of mine where, to my eye anyway, or to my untrained ear or what have you, like, I don't see the influence. I don't see it coming out of an enthusiasm and an adoration of someone else's work. I really see it coming from like, oh, that's your brain. Like, that's not, I don't see any resource being tapped except for your imagination on this.
Yeah. Well, so I loved reading as a child for sure. But I don't remember there being, so like there, I can remember a lot of the books I read, but I don't remember there being a connection between like something I was really passionate about in the reading realm and then like I have to go write or anything like that. The only time I can ever see that happening when I look at my like journals from that period is when I was like 11 years old, the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out. And I had read them via audiobook with my family on a road trip once. So I like had read them, but mostly it was like the movie. So I wrote like this kind of like, there were elves and there was like a, you know, mythical realm or whatever, and all of that. But like, that's the only time I could see the influence of something. Mostly I liked to read and it happened concurrently with liking to write, not kind of like the interplay wasn't as clear, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like if I had been writing consistently through my life, it would have been like, well, this is a story about a little redheaded orphan from Canada whose name was Diane of Blue Gables. It would have been so derivative. And what about music? Like, was there a relationship? Because a lot of creative people, myself included, like there are certain things that are not direct connections, but that are like, yes, I like to write with music, or I don't like to write with music, or do you know what I mean? Like, were even as a young person, did you have a relationship to the setting in which you wanted to kind of tap into your creative voice?
Yeah, so I always write with music, even now. And at that time, it was always like on the moodier end of the spectrum, but never like as deep into those subcultures as other people went. So like emo, you know, was happening around that time. So I definitely listened to like Dashboard Confessional and Taking Back Sunday, but not anything else.
Yeah.
And then like, I was always into Linkin Park as like a preteen and a teenager. But then, and then I started dating, you know, the guy in the metal band. And so I started listening to that kind of music, but I could really only tolerate like the poppiest bands that he listened to, which if you listen to them would sound ridiculous because they're not poppy at all. But you know, at the time it was like, this isn't the heavier stuff. This is like the stuff for girls, you know?
Okay.
You know,
so there's
kind of
I do kind of worry that I'm going to sound dismissive even by asking this, and I apologize in advance for those of you who are Christian metal fans, and if you are, please write me because I want to talk to you more about this. So
please,
I suck at this.
Please don't worry about
this.
It. It's really
you're
okay.
So there is like lighter fare, but still not that light Christian. Metal fit, like these songs are all about Christ, but they're more geared towards what a girl would listen to. And then there's like heavier, more intense stuff, again, still about God and Christ, but that would be like more, like even more hardcore that guys would listen to.
Okay, so I do want to talk about that, but first I want to clarify that the stuff I was listening to is not necessarily Christian.
Okay.
Lot of the stuff he listened to wasn't either. So it wasn't like, only listen to it if it's about Jesus, that kind of thing.
Which I gotcha.
Some people are like that, but not him.
Yeah.
And not me for sure, even at that age. But
I gotcha. Okay.
However, I think when people talk about lighter versus heavier, it's not about content, because you can't actually hear what these people are saying that clearly a lot of the time.
Right.
It's more about the sound. So like, is there ever singing is a mm-hmm. kind of distinction. And like, you know, how much melody is there here? That kind of thing kind of makes the distinction. So so he would kind of play for me like like Opeth, which is like melodic and like really beautiful, but still under the umbrella of metal.
Got it.
Or, you know, just kind of like the like more musical sounding stuff. Like, I don't even know how to explain.
No, yeah. I get it. I mean, I definitely get it, because there is definitely metal that really is just like, it's just guitar. It's just like rhythm, guitar noise and screaming.
Yes.
And I don't mean that I really don't mean that sort of diminishingly, like even some of the kind of like, you know, Norwegian death rock or, you know, metal and stuff.
Yes.
Where you're like, as
with anything, there's the more accessible stuff and the less accessible stuff, which we see in every area of culture, really. So I'm with you.
Yeah,
I get it. I don't really listen to it anymore, so you're not going to offend me.
That would be an interesting thing. Like, to me, that's like, you know, I can't imagine writing to metal, but would you write to metal in addition to emo stuff?
Sometimes. Yeah, it would have to be like pretty chill. Otherwise, it's distracting.
Yeah.
And then I also like sneakily, without letting anyone ever look at my iPod, listen to like pop music.
Okay. yeah.
Yeah.
Needing to maintain an identity obviously there's a version of teenagerhood where there is this sort of like unabashed, like, yeah, I listen to hip hop and I listen to the Indigo Girls and I listen to, you know, I listen to Ani and I listen to, you know, Kelly Clarkson and like, I don't give a shit, versus, you know, like feeling like people have an expectation of what your taste level is, and whatever that is, you have to sort of like stand behind the wall of defense of that.
Yeah. Well, those, what you're describing, the like kind of confident teenagers, man, like I'm impressed with anyone who can be that way at that age, because I was so obsessed with cultivating a very particular identity, which was not exactly in line with my actual identity, because I wanted to like seem really tough and cool and like not like the other girls, you know, one of those teenage girls. And and now I look back and I'm like, oh, if you could have just relaxed and like been yourself, you would have had a much better time.
Oh, well. Yeah. Were you into like going and seeing movies? Would you get like, I was very nerdy about kind of wanting to talk about movies and like having this sort of encyclopedic knowledge that I don't even remember trying to cultivate. It was just one of those things that when you're young and your brain is mushy and a sponge and you happen to be into something, you you're just retaining stuff like that you're not even trying to.
No, I didn't really go to movies unless there was like a group, and usually then it was whatever they were seeing.
Yeah.
But no, I don't remember being particularly into movies ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me that was definitely like some type of food, some type of brain and emotional food as a younger person. And that feeling of people who listen to this podcast frequently know, like, just that feeling of needing to own something, like needing to like being so moved by something and suspecting that that was probably true for a lot of people, and that being very scary somehow. Like, no, I don't want everyone to understand these lyrics the way I understand them, because they these lyrics are so important to me that if I have to share them with a bunch of other people, maybe they lose their power, or maybe I'm less interesting of a person, or, you know, those sorts of like measurements that were, again, like very, very scary somehow in terms of like identity and value.
Yeah. Oh man, I remember those feelings. It wasn't about movies, but just that feeling of like, if other people like it, then I'm not as special, which means like, what am I worth really? Which is just so terrifying. Like I think some people carry that around into their adulthood, and I feel sad for them, but I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad I was able to let that go as an adult, I think.
I know. Me too. And that's one of the things that I enjoy about cons is, I mean, I'm sure there is like a deep level of that happening all the time in places like that as well, because the there can be such fierce passion and enthusiasm for certain things, but just the fact that a group of people wants to get together who all love the same thing and talk about that thing was not something that I would have wanted to do. I did not want to talk about loving this movie with 50 other people. I wanted to like write about it in my journal and feel like I was the only one who really got it, you know?
Right. And
like,
and when
people rather have... than being like, oh, I feel known, I'm understood by this group of people, you know?
Yes. I think what you're pointing out is like some people go to cons and they want to be understood, right? Like they want to have an interaction with someone where they're like, oh, someone finally gets me. These are my people, etc.
Exactly.
But a lot of teenagers, including me, when I was a teenager, it's like, no, I want to be misunderstood. Because, like, no one can possibly comprehend the depths of my being.
That's right. Don't even try. You'll fall into this chasm and you'll never crawl out again. That's how deep I am. I am extraordinary. Yeah. And maybe part of that is, like, I don't know, like, especially if you're somebody who has those insecurities, those certain types of insecurities who aren't just, like, you know, sort of out there going, I don't care what you think because I love this and this or whatever, that maybe that is some sort of like, maybe that is some kind of reinforcement towards believing in yourself in some way, that maybe that's necessary for some of us. Like, we need that kind of protective shell to continue making stuff so that we don't just go, oh my gosh, I'm so ordinary. What could I possibly contribute to the world? What could I possibly come up with that would be, you know, interesting or unique or of value?
Yeah, you know, I really love that way of looking at it, actually, because I think that's really a huge part of it. Just, I would never be able to write if I didn't believe that I had something to say and that I was the only one who could say it. So there is like a level to which you have to believe that like you are special because you have a very particular voice and mindset and viewpoint on the world that needs to be shared, right? The arrogance of being a creative person. But, and I don't know if I would have had that if I hadn't like bullied myself into believing it all throughout my teenage years. And then of course, like there has to come a time, at least, man, I hope for everyone, where you can let it go and be like, okay, well, I don't need to be like the most special and most deep and most interesting person in the world in order to say something that has value.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Macho Man to the top rope. The flying elbow, the cover. We've got a new champion!
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah.
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Saturdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
Well, listen, I want to get into this MASH game with you. I guess I didn't warn you this was coming. So if you don't know what MASH is, or if you're not...
I know about MASH.
We're okay. Okay, we're in good shape. We're in good shape. Everything is right in the world. even though it's super not. But in this tiny world of MASH right now, everything is right in the world. Okay, well, let's start off with the category of let's give you the ability to teleport and to have as much to yourself of these places as you could want. Three places in the world that it would be wonderful to be able to kind of teleport to and then just have a little hideaway that you can disappear to.
You mean like based on my current preferences?
Yeah, based on your current preferences.
And do you mean like a very specific location? I'm going to be very technical about this.
No, I like this. I'm glad that you're pushing me on this. Well, first of all, it's your game, so I want you to feel open to saying, you know, for one category, I'm going to say anywhere in Belgium, but for another category, I'm going to say this very specific beach in Hawaii or whatever.
Okay. Well,
like, I can work with that.
Yes. Yeah. I'm one of those people who's like, I need parameters. Otherwise, the amount of ideas is too overwhelming. So three places in the world. Okay. Well, I love Australia. So I'm going to say the Gold Coast or the Sunshine Coast of Australia.
Great.
It's not the Gold Coast. That's in Chicago, Veronica. And then I also love it here. So can I pick Chicago? Is that allowed?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then my third one would be, my husband and I frequently visit his family in Romania, and I really love it there. So that'll be my third option.
Wonderful. Okay, next category, let us do, I'm going to get into the food category. I can't help myself. I love it too much. Three things that in this reality are either ecologically responsible or highly caloric, or you're allergic, or it's very hard to get and you can't just have it whenever you want it. In this alternate universe we're creating, you can have whatever you want at the snap of your fingers and there are no ramifications. So these are three things that you'd love to have in perpetuity as much as you want, and it's all fine.
Well, number one is bread.
Yep.
I do consume bread, but one cannot consume as much bread as I would like to consume.
So, agreed.
Bread.
1,000% agreed.
What else? I feel like I should pick the things I'm like vaguely allergic to. Eggs make me sick, so I'm trying to think of like the best. Then I guess cake.
Great.
Third. I mean, I'm just like the queen of starch, I guess, because I eat like it's absurdly bland food and it's what I like. So,
you know what? I get it.
So I guess just pasta.
Yeah.
Right? Basically,
nothing wrong with that.
A form of bread.
Nothing wrong with that. There are so many Italian foods that just feel like, oh, you just got this right in such a profound way and it's so simple. Like, why overcomplicate it? And
yeah.
I think pasta is absolutely, and bread. Like, those things are just things you're like, yep, there's a reason that everyone loves this because it's divine and it's not super fussy.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So next category, let's do three. I'm overcomplicating this for myself now. Let's do three people from history. They can be artists, just historical figures of some kind. But three people that it would be interesting to sort of have a conversation with or spend a day with and let them be either a window into the world that they were a part of or just sort of see what this person is really like beyond the scope of the work that you know them for.
Oh, boy. I'm one of those people where if you ask me a question like this, I'll immediately forget all people who have ever existed interested in.
That's the awful thing about this is that I'm one of those people. So you would think that I wouldn't have picked a game that
cruel.
Subjects everyone else to that. It is extremely cruel. No. I for sure am like, what does a person look like? A person, you say? I know I've heard that word somewhere before. And it could also be like, this is not your, like, you know, you're taking this to your grave answers. It's like, this is what I was thinking about in the moment. I just watched this movie about blah, blah, blah last night. So that's my answer today, you know?
Yes. Well, okay. In that spirit, then I would love to chat with Monica Lewinsky. I've been listening to her talks and all her interviews and stuff recently for various reasons. And I just, man, what an interesting person who had such a difficult time.
Oh, yes.
I know. Okay. And so Monica Lewinsky, person number two.
Number one with a bullet. I couldn't be more sure of this one. I've been waiting to be asked this for years.
I'm ready. I'm ready with it. Oh, man. And then why are all of mine alive? Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Great.
Want to talk to her. Make sure she's okay.
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh. And my third person, I feel like I should pick someone from history. Okay, well, there, I don't know if it's like confirmed that this person ever existed exactly, but have you ever heard the legend of Kutulun? She's a Mongolian princess. And I read about her recently, but she was so strong and so good at wrestling that, like, in order to have her hand in marriage, her father declared that, like, they'd have to beat her at wrestling. Otherwise, they'd have to give him, like, 200 horses or give her 200 horses. Yeah, and she gets an army of, like, 10,000 horses because no one can beat her at wrestling. I would love to meet that woman.
Yes. What a great, yes, absolutely. What a great legend. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Okay, next category. Let's do three creative skills that you either would like to be better at or that you feel like you have, you know, no ability towards at all at this point, but to, we're going to give you the ability tomorrow to wake up with like, we'll say three things that you would love to wake up with and be like, oh, I can paint or I can, you know, we're sort of leaning into the creativity side of this now because the next category, spoiler alert, will be like sort of hands-on, handy mathematics, you know, handiwork, like that sort of thing. Not to say that those two things are separate from one another. So it can also be whatever that means to you. If mathematics are beautiful and an art to you, then by all means, they belong in this category. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I'm with you. Well, drawing. Always wanted to be able to draw. And singing. That would be great. Right. And, oh gosh. I think it would be useful to be able to act, which I cannot do even a tiny bit. So I'm so bad.
how many times have you tried?
Very few, but even I was an extra in the Divergent movie, and even that, where I didn't have to speak and I didn't have to do anything, I slowed things down for us. So I was like,
wait a minute. But listen, I got to tell you, that to me is a nightmare. Like the idea of the thing I wrote being adapted into a film where I'm just there, but I don't really have a purpose in the same way I would if I were acting a character. That to me sounds really hard. As a person who does it professionally, that sounds like, what do I, what am I doing? Why am, what do I, should I move my, what do I do with my hands? Like, what do I...
I know. Oh my God. It was horrific because everyone was staring at me. And I think that is what made it worse. But even like in high school, if I tried out for a musical or something, like I can't even describe it to you. It's really bad.
I find that charming. Okay. Well, maybe in this alternate universe, we'll be giving you a real set of acting chops. We'll find out.
Great.
Okay. Next category, as I said, let's do utile skills, whatever that means to you, three.
Okay. So like carpentry?
Great.
Carpentry. Yes. Utile skills.
I've never used that word, that term in my entire life. I don't know why I said it like it was some accepted thing that people talk
is
about.
What kind of
skills do you have? I doubt it. I know what utility is. I guess I just thought if I shortened it, it would turn into a word.
I'm going to start using it. We coined
it
utile?
Now. But tell me, is it utile? The fact that we're doing this now, should we do it? Is it utile? Nothing has ever sounded less like a word.
Oh, my God. I would love to be able to, like, fix cars. Like, mechanicry. Yeah. That's a word, right?
There you go. There you go. I'm looking up utile, and I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, useful. Well, guess what? 100% real, 100% used properly. How disappointing.
I know. Okay. Kind of bummed.
Car mechanics. Great.
And like horticulture.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Beautiful. All right. All due respect to your wonderful partner in life. This is a MASH game. We do need to get into some romance. This can be anyone, anything, any character in a book, any famous person from any time in history, any age. I do not care. Three.
Oh my gosh. Three. Okay.
Feel free to be the like fifth woman who has said that they would like to have a sexual relationship with the fox from Robin Hood.
Oh my God, the fox from Robin Hood. He was hot.
See?
But he's not one of my three. I feel like Harry Potter has to be one of these.
Right.
Not Daniel Radcliffe. Harry Potter, just
Harry
to be
Potter,
clear.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, Daniel
Understood.
Radcliffe seems lovely, but anyway. And then, gosh.
If you want to feel tall, I'm sure you've been around Daniel Radcliffe. I have been around him but once, and I definitely was like, I am the largest woman who has ever existed on the face of the earth when I was standing next to him.
He's particularly short.
He's very petite.
But he wears it well.
He does. He absolutely does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then... I forget that. Oh, his name is Patterson. The main character in the movie Patterson, whose name is also Patterson, played by Adam Driver, but not Adam Driver, the character.
Patterson. Yes. Patterson. Fair and understood and accepted, like, and applauded.
Thank you. And third, who did I have a crush on like as a child? I feel like, oh, Keanu Reeves. Duh.
Oh, right. Keanu Reeves, who suddenly everyone acknowledged as, like, the best human being on the face of the earth. I did not see that coming.
I know, that was weird.
Not to say I thought he was a jerk in any way, shape, or form, but I just didn't have a sense of him. Like, I didn't have a concern about him as a human person off screen. Do you know what I mean? I was like, yeah, he's going to get on screen and do this stuff.
Well,
and then suddenly everyone was like, he's amazing, which is
I
great.
Had a crush on him because of The Matrix, which I watched in sixth grade, which is my, like, you know, your peak, like, have a crush on a...
Oh, yes.
Boy, period. But then, yeah, lifelong fan. I don't know. He's charming. His acting is wooden, but he is charming. Sorry, Keanu.
He's very
like,
charming.
I don't know. That's not the point.
He's very charming. Yeah, it's not, that's, there's, it, it's, listen, it's layers. There's layers here. There's layers. Mm-hmm. Okay, next category. Let's do three alternate, let's do, this is going to be sort of like Vacation Home, but this is going to be, you can sort of fold into an imaginary world, be it one from a book or from a movie. There are three places that don't really exist, or it could be like the moon or undersea, but three unrealistic places that you would love to be able to just disappear into at will and be a there for as long as you like or as short as you like.
Yeah, so I would like a deep sea house. That would be good.
Great.
And also a spaceship.
Great.
Mm-hmm. What's my other? Oh, like a I was trying to think of a house on a cliff, but those exist in real life.
I just had the craziest idea in the history of crazy ideas. Imagine a cliff. Now imagine. I can't even say it.
Oh my God.
I'll give you your cliff house. I'm not afraid.
Okay, what if it like hovers really over the edge of a cliff? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. Listen, no one is saying it's smart to have like a wonderful house on the edge of a precarious cliff. So we're going to give it that magical quality that allows it to be safe in a way that certainly that house would not be otherwise.
Cliff adjacent hover house.
Cliff adjacent hover house, obviously. Obviously, Janet. Wonderful. Okay. And now let's do three musicians, composers, singers, songwriters, bands from any time, any era that that you would like to be able to say, like, I mean, and this is very loaded, so do with it what you will. Yeah, they wrote a song about me.
Well, okay. Radiohead.
Great.
Taylor Swift.
Beautiful. This is what we're talking about.
Love it. Okay. And lastly... Bob Dylan.
Great. Many people say he won the Nobel Prize because of his amazing depiction of... No. okay. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do my little squiggle. So just for these next couple of seconds, you know, decide when you want me to stop. I'm starting now.
Stop.
Okay. I am going to do a little minor, low-key, non-math... I
sure.
can, do you have stuff that you can tell people about that they need to be checking out? That's yours and that you're excited about. Cause if you can do that while I'm doing this, then that will be a perfect use of the time.
Great. Okay. Well, my first book for adult readers just came out in April while under quarantine. It is called Chosen Ones. And it's about a group of people who saved the world when they were teenagers, and now it's 10 years later, and they've got issues. and also the world still has issues, so that is what it's about. And that's pretty much what I've got going on right now. Otherwise,
I want to be clear that I knew that you had a recent book, but I had to do that host thing where you're like, now do you have anything that you would like to tell people about?
No, I appreciate it. And I was not concerned. But yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. I am very excited. This is a real eclectic series of results.
Oh, I'm excited.
First of all, I want to congratulate you for your mansion in Romania.
Great.
your beautiful, vast Romanian mansion, beautiful country, replete with a nice manor and mansion or castle or two, as I understand it. So,
yes, indeed.
So you can look forward to that. I feel certain that you will have, like, you know, multiple kitchens. Certainly one that is just for bread. Which will be at your disposal in all shapes and forms in perpetuity with zero ramifications. I want to congratulate you, too. Now, listen, I don't know if you built that whole mansion yourself, but you could have, because you have some real killer carpentry skills. Real killer carpentry skills.
That's very exciting.
I like to imagine you. Yeah, I like to. Oh, you know what? And it may not be that it's it may not be that you maybe didn't build the mansion in Romania, because my guess is that probably has some history to it. It's probably been around longer than you. But you probably did hand build your cliff adjacent hover house.
Yes. I was hoping for that one.
Yeah, you definitely got it. And again, carpentry skills out the wazoo. I want to congratulate you, too, on your beautiful singing. I like to think of you working away with your hands there, just singing beautiful, beautiful, melodious tunes. If you want to take it pro, feel free. But I like the idea of you singing while you're working. I want to also congratulate you on your... and I don't know, is it weird if you cover your own song that someone else wrote about you because you're such a beautiful singer? I think Taylor Swift would be fine with it.
Oh, yeah.
But she did write a fantastic song that is for you and about you. And I believe that is it, other than that you have this, you have the opportunity to chum around with Ms. Monica Lewinsky. That's going to be some fun bonding times.
Monica,
I imagine.
And Veronica.
Monica, right. Veronica. What's not to love about that TV show? And then you are enjoying all of this wonderful mystery and adventure with, and I want to be very clear on this, the character from the book, Harry Potter.
Oh my God, that's the he probably helped me with my hover house.
I think it's a very good chance. A very good chance he got involved in the construction of the hover house for sure. That is your not too bad, huh? That is your beautiful 100% guaranteed alternate universe MASH future. I want to thank you so very much for doing the podcast. I've been very much looking forward to this, and it has 100% met all of my hopes and expectations.
Well, thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
I look forward to us both wondering why our streets are so crowded as we go outside.
I know. Go home, people.
Listen, everybody. Just take care of yourselves. That's all I can ask. Please, everyone, check out the new book, and I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.